everyone. This is the All Out Blitz podcast with your host, Brett Clendenin, and my main man, my sidekick, my bestie, Joshua Jenkins. This is the inaugural episode. Did I say that right? The inaugural episode of the All Out Blitz podcast. Named it that because we're going to be bringing it hard each and every week. Hard-hitting information, emotional information, and really just, you know, we want to laugh. We want to laugh about it. It's going to be a lot of sports. It's not going to be all sports, but we're going to enjoy ourselves. That's why it's called All Out Blitz. And we're just looking to have a great time. We are Vol fans, but it's been pretty emotional for us the last 10 years. So we will delve into everything in sports that is relevant right now. We're in the slow season, and we're about to start August 1st, which is the kickoff of a little football. So I know I'm raring to go. I hope everybody else is. But excited to get it done. Joshua, I don't know what you want to say, but just tell people, you know, how sexy you are.
Yeah, well, definitely extremely sexy. Don't know what to say other than that about my sexiness. But, you know, just ready to get into a little bit of sports action with my main man, B. Cly over here, also known as Brett Clendenin, the mouth of the South. Best friend ever. Can't tell everybody how excited I am for football coming up. It's definitely the time I come alive each year. So, just excited to get this going. Other than that, I'm pretty much a tech guy. Not a fancy sports journalist like my buddy Brad over here. But I am an avid sports fan, you know, an avid sports critic from the couch.
Critic.
So,
and you would say Josh is also our producer. He's our tech guy, something he makes us look and sound very, very gentle. But he's got a lot to say, and he's got a lot to say in a lot of areas. We are not face-to-face, which is emotional. I'm in Knoxville, Tennessee. Like I said, we're both University of Tennessee graduates. Joshua is in Nashville, so I don't get to stare in his beautiful blue eyes. But this helps us, you know, keep the fire burning in the friendship. That's what we're doing, talking, having a great time. We're going to kick it off with a little college football as about a month away from getting started, and this is when you and just a little bit longer for NFL. But we'll start, first of all, because SEC football is probably our main focus being in the Southeast. It's what we love the most. But all college football, all NFL, we'll talk anything that comes up, right? Golf, we're not going to talk hockey. We're not going to talk hockey and NASCAR, so get out of here for that, obviously. This isn't a podcast for you if that's what you want to hear. But everything, almost everything else, we're going to talk about.
Yeah, and probably not a lot of Boise State or Pac-12.
Yeah, if you're looking for Wyoming or talking about Colorado's upcoming bowl chances, yeah, you've come to the wrong place. But what you've not come to the wrong place is, and I want to start this off because I watched SEC Media Days was a couple weeks ago, maybe a week ago. There's about 30 hours of coverage, and I felt awful about it, but I watched about 20 hours of it. Now, I got to hear some funny things said by the coaches. I got to hear some emotional things said by the players. But the interesting thing was, and I've been hearing this for a while, right? Reverend Hugh Freeze, as they call him, he's a very religious, faithful man. And I remember during the SEC Media Days, they were discussing – they were like, well, Hugh, you know, we got this SEC, you know, we got this NCAA thing hanging over your head. And he kept saying, yeah, I'm upset with it. And then they were asking about the Houston Nutt thing, which we're going to let Josh elaborate on in a second with the kind of four keys of what's going on in the Ole Miss world right now. And he just said, well, I didn't like the timing of the Houston Nutt thing. And I wish we could talk about our players instead of all this bad stuff that I'm alleged to have done. And it was kind of sad. And then a week later, he gets fired with cause. So Josh is going to take you down a road, paint the picture of what's been going on in the Ole Miss world the last couple years. And to be honest with you, it's not pretty. Now, just to start off, they're going to be terrible this year in football. They're predicted to be the worst team in the West, maybe the worst team in the entire league. They have self-imposed a bowl ban this year for all of their alleged activities. But Josh, hit us with kind of the four key points we talked about in pre-production of what's occurred in the Ole Miss world and where they stand now.
Yeah, so of course we all know Hugh Freeze is the reverend, as my friend so likely put it. He's well known to tout his Christianity and his Christian beliefs in the homes and living rooms of five-star and four-star recruits and win them over.
Yep, very true.
He's a writer's dream for the last few years, and he's also known as bringing Ole Miss up from the ashes and just bringing some real powerhouse talent. But yep, as of late, we've had some issues, and the signs have been in the air. And so I think the first thing was the Laramie Tunzel fiasco that we had on draft day.
Yep.
Where I believe he just basically tweeted out that I'm getting paid. Some people would question the intelligence there, but, you know, it's one thing. Then we've got the defamation lawsuit by Houston Nutt. And as Brett was saying, I wish we could, you know, he was just saying, I wish we could just focus on our players and then making them better. And sure, he's talking about bringing God into their lives. And so, but Houston Nutt was upset. Apparently there was a long running smear campaign against him. Freeze unfazed by this, showing up in media days. And then the bombshell hit. Now we've got some calls to, an escort service.
Tell us how that came about. Cause that's something I didn't know about, but the way it was figured out, and the way from a rival fan, nonetheless.
yeah. So it was alleged to have been dug up by the Houston Nutt camp during this whole fiasco. But what we have figured out in a report from ESPN that it was actually found by an avid Mississippi State fan by the name of Steve Robertson. Okay, and the report is Steve Robertson saw a phone number with a 313 area code, was stunned by what he discovered in a Google search. It was a call made on January 19th of 2016. It was lasting 1 minute, and this number was connected with several advertisements for female escorts. Robertson.
Now let me ask you this, Josh. Let me ask you this. If it's a minute conversation, so if we're projecting what that sounded like, was that Hugh saying, you know, hey, this is Hugh, send over Bambi as soon as you can, talk to you later. I mean, is that pretty much, I mean, in a minute, is that pretty much what he's doing? Just ordering a young lady probably that he's had before. Maybe to heal her, maybe to put his hands on her and pray for her. Right. But more likely, it was penetration.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'm guessing. I hadn't used my powers of deduction to actually think about it. It was only a minute, so I guess he wasn't really looking at the menu too thoroughly. So he probably already knew the steak he wanted and how he wanted it cooked. That's what I'm thinking.
So he's, it was one of his favorite restaurants. He's been there before. I don't need to see the menu. Give me whoever, you know, Bambi, whatever her name is, and get her out here. Is that what you're saying? Because that's what I'm thinking about during the minute conversation. It wasn't the wrong number, like he may have said, but he's been there, he saw the steak he wanted, and he got after it. Is that what you're thinking?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think they knew from the call, and they said, you want the regular Big Hugh? And they said, of course I do. Put it on my Ole Miss card.
Put it on my Ole Miss black card. Yeah. And the thing is, he called from an Ole Miss phone. Like, so it's his company. Yeah. It's the school's phone that they give him and pay for. And he can't even do it on another phone. Like, he doesn't have a personal number as well. Like, it's like, or, Hugh, or have some class.
A burner. Or no, like every,
yeah, he can't even get a cheap. Yeah, the guy's making $4 million a year, and he can't even have a burner phone for his escorts. I mean, I don't understand where this comes from, that guy can just think, well, I'm invincible, or he's already in trouble. What is he thinking?
Yeah, Hugh, come on, man. I mean, for a brilliant a tactician that he's supposed to be, let's think about what we're doing here. He must have just felt like he could get away with anything. But, yeah, my favorite part of this story, hearing about this fan that caught it,
yeah,
Steve Robertson that caught this, was so stunned by what he found on Google, he had to ask his wife to read the telephone number again to him because he didn't believe what he was seeing with his own eyes. So his wife confirms it. Little do we know, Steve Robertson has a prior relationship with Houston Nutt's attorney, Thomas Mars. And all he had to do was make one phone call to Thomas Mars, and then there it went from there. And this guy's been a Mississippi State Bulldog fan for about 40 years and literally has the logo tattooed on his hand. So, yeah, I'm sure he's feeling really good right now, and God knows what he does with that tattoo on his hand and what that thing's seen in its life. Really, really interesting stuff here.
It really is. I mean, Hugh Freeze, it's kind of funny. He used to be a high school football coach, and I played in high school for a private school, and we used to play some of those schools down in his area. And there was always the rumors that Freeze liked to dabble in the younger women. He had a little bit of an alter ego, and that it was kind of his deal. And people were like, well, no, he's a great guy, you know what I mean? And then this comes out, and then you're hearing those rumors kind of hit home, and you know they're not having to pay him a dollar. Okay, they fired him with cause for some sort of moral conduct that he didn't live up to, obviously in his contract. So he's not having to be paid anything. But we don't want to spend a lot of time on this. The story's incredible. There's just so many layers to it. And the thing is, can a guy come back from this? Right. Like we've talked about, well, we've discussed off air about, and I don't want to get too much into this, but United Airlines is known in the last 3 or 4 months for dropping elbows and kicks to the face, whatever they need to do if you're acting up in a United Airlines aircraft.
Right.
And can they come back from this? They've got a better shot because there's not as many airlines out there. But Hugh Freeze, can he come back, Josh, is my question. Do you come back from this? Does he become an offensive coordinator somewhere? Does he eventually get back to it? Because don't forget, think about something else. Bobby Petrino was cheating on his wife with a young blonde at Louisville. He got into a wreck and a motorcycle accident with her. Which kind of like, and his face was like all red and he had a neck brace. And so like the guys in the hospital, they bring him out of the hospital and they sit him down and they're like, well, your wife knows you're cheating. You look like hell and you've got red road burn all over your face and we're going to fire you. So, but here's the deal. That guy has made it back, right? He has come full circle, and he's back coaching again, and he's back, what, at Louisville. So it's possible. What do you think, Josh? What do you think Hugh will bring his – because, you know, he's all about forgiveness, you know. He's going to have to pray for forgiveness, or maybe it was just a butt doll. Isn't that the excuses we're hearing from the Freeze camp, that it may have been a butt doll or an accidental dial?
Well, that was Freeze's claim himself. It was a butt dial. But Ole Miss said it's termed a pattern that was apparently so cut and dry, they were going to have to fire him if he had resigned. So,
yeah, and I read that too, that there was patterns of behavior. It wasn't just one thing. But here's the deal about a butt dial, Joshua. If it's a butt dial, doesn't that mean that that's a number in your phone already that you've dialed before? Because I don't know that a butt can dial just 10 digits like that. I'm pretty sure a butt dial would mean that you've had it as a recent call in or out. Am I right?
Well, yeah, unless his butt's got some impressive, like, iPhone unlocking skills and like...
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Going into the app where you actually have to type in the number. That's a good point there. We've got another deduction here that a lot of people probably aren't making.
And that's what we're trying to do with this podcast. We're trying to work it out. We're figuring it out on air just like you are. But the signs don't look good when we start to add them up. So, no. Hugh, Reverend, we wish you the best. You happen to be the snake that was rumored to be in sheep's clothing, but you know what? And you put Ole Miss in a tough spot, right? They have a bowl ban. They have an interim head coach. They're supposed to be awful this year. And then you fire a guy, what, 40 days before the season starts? That's not a good feeling. You know what I mean? But I'm concerned, but we'll move on from Ole Miss. Let's talk about something that is going right in this conference, and that is just down the road, hop over to the other state, the University of Alabama. obviously, when I look at the SEC this year, Alabama's been ridiculous. Obviously, they lost, were edged the last couple seconds by Clemson in the national championship game to lose. But what Nick's done there is remarkable. I put Nick as one of the three best coaches of all time. As a Tennessee fan, I kind of get annoyed that we play them every year as our permanent cross rival. I know they're a rival, and that's great, but I'm so sick of just counting a loss right at the beginning of the season when some teams get to play Mississippi State every year. So, again, it gets me emotional. It really does. But let's talk about the numbers, Josh, because Nick Saban, in his work, he's worth every penny. Let's don't kid ourselves. But let's talk about his new contract that he signed in the offseason. Before we even get into how good Alabama is going to be on the field, tell me about the numbers, because they're beyond staggering.
Yeah, this year alone, Nicky boy is going to get paid $11.125 million. Under a 3-year contract extension that includes $4 million in signing bonus that's already been approved by the university board. But, you know, altogether, he's got an 8-year deal running through January 31st of 2025, and they're scheduled to pay Saban $65 million, and that's not including the bonuses that could total around $700,000 each year. And I just want to kind of think about this, right? So, yeah. Nicky also gets paid a talent fee that I've found out here. So basically, Nicky takes all of the salaries that these NFL caliber players would make, and he just absorbs them into his own salary. So I can't think of anything more amazingly awesome than and boss like than that, and what he's doing there.
Wait! I'm confused. Say that again. What are we talking about here?
He gets a talent fee for all of the talent that he is able to recruit. So anything that you could would basically, he gets all of the value that those people bring built into money and then added to his contract.
Talking about recruits, or is he talking about players?
Recruits and players that he brings to the program.
Well, and that's the thing. When you have the mixture of the best coach in the world with the best players in the world, it becomes an issue that the SEC is facing right now. Now, to say that Alabama's the heavy favorite is ridiculous. They return almost everybody on their offense. They got the stud receiver, Ridley, both running backs, and Harrison Scarborough. And then they've got the freshman quarterback coming back, sophomore, Jalen Hurts. And then defensively, you know, you look at guys drafted. They had a million guys drafted as usual. But, I mean, the problem with them is they replace five stars with five stars. So it doesn't matter that you don't know their names, because you will after this season. Alabama, absolute heavy, heavy favorite to win it all. The SEC's down right now. I mean, I heard piece of crap David Pollack talking earlier today, and I don't like that guy at all. But he was talking, and he was talking about how the SEC was really down behind Alabama. He mentioned that the Big Ten, he thought, was the best conference this year in football, which I found interesting. But, yeah, they're definitely down. It's Alabama, and then everybody else is just grasping at those toes right now. But those numbers Josh mentioned are staggering. Emotional money. And as me and Josh have talked about off air, the $11 million he's owed this year, which is ridiculous, more than any coach has ever made ever in 1 year. Josh said it, $4 million signing bonus. Insane kind of money, right? But the thing is, he's worth every penny. Josh, tell us the stat about the governor.
Yeah, he's making 92 times more than the governor of Alabama. So he's definitely the highest state employee of Alabama that they currently have.
There's no doubt about it. By 92 times. And the thing about him, and if you're the tennis coach at Alabama, if you're the baseball coach at Alabama, if you do anything in athletics at all, you are making more money because Nick Saban is there. Everybody's making more money. And this guy, I'm like, wow, is this worth it? Alabama doesn't bat an eye with the money that comes in that program and the money that they can surround these other small sports with. So Nick Saban, as long as he's there, everyone at Alabama should be smiling. Okay. Now, we've dug into those two teams. That's two teams in the West. Let's get a little closer to home. Let's talk about our beloved Vols. Been tough for us. Let's don't kid ourselves. Lyle Jones, as I like to call him. Lyle Butch Jones, our head coach. Been here, done some good things. He replaced probably the worst coach ever in the SEC history, if I had to say so, and Derek Dooley. The problem with Butch is people compare Blough to Derek Dooley. And the problem is, when you're comparing somebody to the worst ever, they seem to look really good, right? He has bolstered he's bolstered the talent a ton. He's done some very, very gentle things with the roster. I mean, let's just look at the NFL draft. I mean, we had six guys drafted in the first four rounds. I mean, that's remarkable stuff. You had Barnett, Sutton, Jalen Reeves-Maybin, Kamara, Dobbs, and Malone, all really good players. So, I mean, he's done some great things. And the way people are looking at Tennessee now is, and people are upset with Tennessee, Booger McFarland, Fat Booger McFarland, and who calls themselves Booger is beyond me. Okay. His name's Booger, and he's going to tell us that we're going to be atrocious this year. And the thing is, he said it at SEC Media Days. He said, Tennessee is going to be atrocious this year. And it's like, well, Booger, first of all, do you know what the word atrocious means? Because atrocious means that they're going to be like 4-8 or 5-7. We're talking Vandy. And like even Paul Feinbaum's like, are you sure atrocious is the right word? I don't know that they're going to be. And he's like, no, they're going to be atrocious. And then somebody else said, well, I think Booger's a little upset that he picked Tennessee the last couple of years, and they've really faded. So now they lose these talented guys, and people are saying, well, hell, they can't be better. You know they're going to fade. So they're predicted third in the East. There's a chance to overachieve. I think there's no doubt about it. There's some talent on the roster. And the SEC East is, I hate to say it, I'm an East guy, but the East is down comparably to the West. I mean, a lot of that's Nick Saban, but the West is just a better conference right now, top to bottom, no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
It's not even close. So, Josh, talk to me about what you're seeing. And, I mean, you can go into a little bit. Obviously, we know the coach speak and the obnoxious nature of his conversations. But talk to us a little bit about our beloved Vols and how you're feeling about them this year and Lyle maybe as a whole.
Oh, goodness gracious. I don't even know what to say. I mean, last year, if we were going to do something, was the main year. So, again, the SEC East is even worse this year than it was last year. So, I mean, to be quite honest, Brett, I don't even know what to expect. I'm hoping we have at least a 6-win season, but I'm not sure that we are. I don't know. You know, I really don't know what to expect this year, to be quite honest. I'm excited about JK, John Kelly, yeah, the running back. Sure. I think he showed some good stuff last year, and I think he's going to have an excellent Absolutely. Year this year. We really had some problems last year defensively, and it bothers me. So, and I don't know about the quarterback situation either with losing Dobbs. I'm really not sure what it is we're going to get out of Lyle Jones. We're hearing a lot of the same stuff from him. And I got so tired of listening to him last year in his press conferences that I just got sick and then just really couldn't even watch any more press conferences or hear him talk because we were hearing life champions and all kinds of things of that nature. So, you know, I'm just hoping that we pull out some games we're really not supposed to win this year and don't lose to Vandy and South Carolina, just absolutely terrible teams. And, you know, maybe we can pull off a decent season and maintain where we were last year. And I think that would be a big win for us this year. Of course, I want a national championship, but let's be realistic here.
Yeah, no, you make a good point. I think a lot of people feel like Joshua. Listen, I'm a season ticket holder. Tickets come in the mail in a week. I'm emotional, excited about it, as I am every season. And I'm optimistic. Like, I look at the schedule and say, boy, I'd love to win them all. But the truth is that if we can have a season like we've had the last couple, we've been 9-4 2 years in a row. If we can be 9-4 again, you can't be too mad at the season. There is some returning players. Like he said, I think John Kelly's going to be great. I think the quarterback battle with Garantano and Dormady will be interesting. I think Dormady will win it out eventually. But they've got some returning players, but then they've got to fill some spots. And the thing is, too, the injuries last year were insane, okay? I mean, the defensive injuries, we had third and fourth string linebackers playing. You can never have enough depth. obviously, the problem with Lyle is he puts himself in tough situations when he talks about, well, we're looking for guys with five-star hearts, and we're looking to be life champions. I mean, those kind of nasty... That's what he, yeah, that's, those are two of his big phrases, which really don't help him at all. So I'm nervous, of course. I'm cautiously optimistic, but I think a lot of people are like Joshua when you say, I don't know what to expect. And I think people have been pretty quiet this offseason because you got to realize what we were doing last year at this time. We were a top 10 team. People were like, man, we're going to make the playoffs this year, maybe lose one game. The expectations were out of this world. I couldn't even stand it last year at this point, 35 days before kickoff. I just couldn't even handle it. But now people are pretty deflated. They're getting jacked up a little bit at this point, but not really much at all. They're kind of just sitting there saying, let's just wait and see what happens. Cautiously optimistic, kind of just hoping, but no guarantees at all. And that's where I think a lot of the fan base is with Joshua. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. And, you know, Lord willing, it's a good season.
What's the over-under on Lyle running out in the middle of field, giving a lot of fist bumps and crying like he's won a gold medal in the Olympics or something?
You talking about like the Georgia game?
Yeah.
Well, he's gonna get emotional. We're gonna get in later some of the new rule changes coming out because he's gonna have to calm down a little bit because there are some rule changes that are gonna harp on him heavily. But we'll get into that a little bit later before we jump into, as we will right now, Florida. And let's turn our attention to the Florida Gators, the nemesis of the Vols. And you know, I wanted to start with a beautiful, because the funniest thing that happened at SEC Media Days, and Josh is going to love this. Now, Josh, tell me you saw the picture of Donkey. Looked like he was making love to a, I don't know if it was a great white or a hammerhead or a sand shark, but it looked to be penetration and there looked to be some love making. I guess they call that bestiality. Joshua, you did see the picture, right?
Yeah.
Well, and the funny thing about it is, the best part about it is this guy, whoever it was, who looked like he'd had about, you know, 20 beers, he had the belly going, he was naked on top of a shark, obviously, which says it all. He looks like a couple different people, okay? He looks like the CEO of Jimmy John's, first of all. And he also looks like, Donkey, the Florida Gators head coach. And so Jim McElwain, if I can call him by his real name. But so both people had to make statements saying, that was not me screwing a shark. Okay. That was not me screwing a shark. So the interesting about that in SEC Media Days, we got into it a little bit. And one of the questions was, so, Jim, I know, you've had some weird questions asked to you. I never thought I'd ever ask this, but, what's the deal with, you know, how many questions have you got about you and, you humping the shark? And Jim's response to it, it was very awkward. It was like, he looked at him and he goes, I like the way you put that. That was good. And he kind of giggled. And then he was like, you know, I like to poke fun at people. I like to make jokes. I like to rib people more than anybody, you know? But he said that. And then he said, in his little goofy, like, buck teeth beaver looking face, he said, but when it starts to affect my family, and then he literally paused and he never said anything again. He just nodded his head for about 15 seconds. He just nodded his head. When it starts to affect my family, and literally just nodded
his family.
Well, he was just emotional, I guess, and he just literally, and it was the most awkward thing because he kept just nodding his head, like, and he's like, you know, and the way, and it affects my family, and then just nods his head, and everybody just looks at him like, what's going on? What's he going to say next? And he literally didn't say anything else, and then so people are just standing there, and they're like, he's like, any other questions? And they're like, well, we didn't know you were ready for another question. You stopped in the middle of your phrase there. But who knows if it was him? It looked like a deep sea fishing outing. If it was, obviously, it's not a
great. It was him. It was not him.
Yeah. Hey, there were a lot of people. I'm not so sure it was him either, but I don't know that we can definitively, you know, we can't definitively take him out of this yet. Okay, Joshua.
Okay, so we definitely know though it wasn't the Jimmy John CEO, is that what you're saying?
Well, I can't pencil him out either. I mean, to be honest with you, not at this point. I mean, nobody knows for sure. It was either some drunk wherever it was, or it was one of these two guys. I mean, obviously he's got a familiar face.
I mean, if I'm CEO of Jimmy John's, the first thing on my bucket list is probably humping the hell out of a shark straight out of the ocean. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, you know.
That's on the bucket list if you've got millions.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think he may have. I think the Jimmy John's guy took it a little bit better in stride because if you know you're not making love to a shark on a boat with 20 beers naked. You're usually not too defensive. So my concern with this character, McElwain, is you're so defensive about it. But if you didn't do it, it's way out of the ballpark. Just say, no, that wasn't me, you nut jobs. But, you know, he's really taken and probably more questions than he would have ever liked to. So who knows?
Yeah, I feel like the statement about his family, though, like if that happened to me, like all of my family is calling me and making more fun of me. Like it's not infecting them at all. They're just laughing at me with the rest of the world. So
of course,
I don't know what's going on there. I don't know who picks on his family for a photo of him potentially humping a shark that is obviously not their father or yeah, a husband or whoever we're talking about here. So I don't understand what happened, but you know,
it was an off season thing and it made us giggle. We try to keep it light here on the All Out Blitz podcast. But yeah, like you said, I mean, if you're his daughter or something and like, well, my family's been really affected by it. People have been making shark jokes and been saying their dad's a bestiality lover. I mean, it's like, I don't know. I think they're going to find it kind of funny. And then they can also look at the picture and be like, that's not dad. I think they know more than anybody that's not dad. But to get off of his humping for a second, one thing this donkey loves is he loves his football team this year. The one thing I learned, and I'll tell you this right now, the one thing I learned about the SEC watching media days is I truly believe that everybody in the SEC East believes they can win the conference. Now, I don't think that's possible necessarily, but I believe that every team thinks that way, and here's why. Florida is obviously won it the last 2 years, all right? Georgia's coming off a team with a lot of talent, and they got a lot of guys returning. Florida, the deal with them is they're bringing in Malik Zaire. So if you know that name, former Notre Dame quarterback, he played a handful of games the last couple of years for them. He's transferring into Florida, pulling the old graduate degree deal where he can transfer in and play 1 year. So it's either going to be Zaire or Felipe Franks, a redshirt freshman at quarterback. They've not looked good offensively since he's been there, which is kind of Donkey's forte, his offense. They haven't been good offensively. Defensively, they've been great, but they're losing a ton of talent off their defense. But a lot of people feel they're going to reload. And Georgia and Florida are the two favorites to win the East by far. Like I said, with Georgia, you've got Sony Michel and Nick Chubb surprising everybody by both coming back to school. You got your boy Jacob Eason, who's a sophomore next year, who had some up and downs, but the guy's got a cannon, as we saw in that Georgia game. And let me just say this. I was at the Georgia game last year, Tennessee-Georgia game, and it was one of the best weekends of my life. But I'll say this. I went with our buddy, one of our best friends, Alan Russell. Sweet Alan Russell, who's he's the head softball coach at a local high school around here, real sweetheart. With four of us went down with our wives, and I just there were so many up and downs in that game, and I got so sad because it was one of the first away games I'd been to in a while. And when Eason, who's got an absolute cannon, when he threw that touchdown pass with 10 seconds left, it nearly broke my heart. And I literally say that meaning my heart was nearly broken. And I didn't say a word. Ever since he caught that pass, I never said a word. The whole, like, 3 to 5 minutes that went through that point. And when when Jawan Jennings, that dog in him, made that catch, I literally, and I want to hear Josh's perspective because he's probably watching on TV, but I literally couldn't believe what I was seeing. I couldn't tell that he caught it anyway. I could just see people going nuts around him in white jerseys. But boy, what a special, special way to start Kirby Smart's tenure. And this guy, speaking of this guy, Kirby Smart, this guy, I don't know what fraternity he was in, but he had to be in a fraternity because this guy's got, he's got the fraternity hair. He sounds just like a Pike back in the day, back was in, when I was in college. That's what he sounds like.
What does that sound like? Tell me what that sounds like, because I'm not sure what you mean by that.
What does a Pike sound like? And I didn't mean to get into this fraternity and put them on blast right off the bat. I didn't even know I was going to be talking about Pike. But he just kind of has that, like, you know, Southern, like, where he needs to be wearing. He wants the Crocs, you know, the Croc glasses on. Or what are those glasses called where you have the straps, you know. And he's got the loafers and the shorts with the sailboats on them and a really gentle striped collared shirt. You know, that kind of deal. I mean, he seems like a sweet guy. The thing about him is we never knew anything about him because Nick Saban, he doesn't allow assistant coaches to speak to the media. So you don't get to know these coaches until they become head coaches, just like McElwain. Nobody knew what this goofball was doing until they said, all right, now you get to talk for yourself. Because Nick doesn't really let a lot of people talk other than him. He runs with an iron fist. But I got off of my point. Josh, were you sitting at your house watching the Georgia game, watching that Hail Mary happen, and just lost your mind or what?
Absolutely. I did the exact same thing every other Vol fan did that day. Probably, you know, did both numbers in my pants and screamed as loud as I could and ran around the house. You could hear neighbors screaming in their houses from the inside of my house. It was pretty crazy. Oh, yeah. You could hear other neighbors that we didn't even know are Vol fans screaming at one house, and you can either hear a whole other group like screaming, no, that we're all Georgia fans right down the street. So it was pretty, was pretty cool. Totally unexpected. I had I was crushed as well. Thought we had lost the game. There's a very small percentage we were going to hit that. So pretty much the same experience, you know, being there would have definitely been a lot more emotional for me.
Oh, it really was. And I mean, I was worried about the Georgia fans, you know, how they would treat us. For the most part, out at the bars later that night, they were okay. One of the guys kind of crossed the line. Alan was feeling pretty good, and we were leaving the bar at the end of the night, and one of the Georgia fans came up to us and said, Dobbs looks like a cancer patient, which I found out pretty inappropriate. And Alan did too. His wife had to kind of just block him because he was a little tipsy and he was mouthing back at him. And it was just some punk 22-year-old. But it's like, listen, be a little more respectful to Dobbs. He's got alopecia. Okay. He has trouble growing hair. But he's not a cancer patient, dickhead. And I'm sorry. He just Dobnail booted you and you're upset. But for the most part, they treated us pretty good.
Yeah.
But that's the two teams Tennessee's going to have to compete with. Those are the two teams probably one of us three will win it all. In the preseason voting, they were almost identical with people that were picking Florida or Georgia. So we'll see. Both have more talent probably than Tennessee. But I think Tennessee enjoys this underdog role. They didn't seem, from talking to some reporters in the local area, they didn't seem too comfortable with the alpha dog or the favorite role. And Tennessee sometimes doesn't love that, you know, feeling. So they seem to be more inept with people counting them out and predicting them to not be that great this year. And I think that's a good place to be. I really do. As far as the rest of the East, I don't want to spend a lot of time on them because they're all pretty bad. Missouri, Vandy, Kentucky. You know, the one thing I'll say about Vandy, Josh, you live in Nashville, so I know you hear a little bit of the Nashville radio. The Vandy head coach, he is an interesting guy. He's got some interesting phrases he uses. He's very passionate, and he, like, everything, when people would ask him questions at media days, I felt like he was just, like, rhyming. You know what I mean? Like, he would answer the question with, like, a rhyme at the end. Like, you know, we got to bring it with intensity, attitude, focus. And then he would rhyme it, like a rhyme with a fourth word. And it was just like, what's going on here? And he was just super intense. He talked a lot about the Tennessee win. Because that's the thing about Lyle Jones. The reason people dislike him the most is because he's lost to Vandy 2 out of 4 years. Right? So that's not a good sign. That's good for Vandy, of course, and they love beating us, and it gets them fired up. But they think they're going to be better than usual, which is not a huge step up from being the worst. But they've got a lot of veteran guys coming back. I don't know if you've heard anything in the local area, Joshua. Obviously, you're not far off. Tell us what you're thinking about Vandy and that program.
Well, locally here, people are a little bit more excited about MTSU than Vandy, if that kind of tells you anything. So,
oh boy,
not a ton of excitement. You know, they're glad the coach returned. They're a big fan of the coach. But, you know, the truth is, last year he was on the hot seat pretty hard here. And
he
the
was,
game
yeah.
that actually saved his butt was the Tennessee game. And
yeah.
Yeah, there's no way they should have. There's no way they should have won that game. But you got to give them a little credit. I mean, what do they have? 500 or 600 yards of rushing offense on us, just destroyed us, and really yeah. exposed a bad weakness in our team for the rest of the season that we had to deal with. But there's not a lot of chatter that I've been hearing that really would interest anybody. So nothing too much to see here. But
yeah.
definitely, probably somebody that's again just because of who they are is going to give. A lot of people, some hard times in the East.
Yeah, and they've won, and that's the one thing that they've done, is they've won a few games that they shouldn't win. I believe Derek Mason and his program, I think last year they beat Georgia and Tennessee. So
yes.
that is a good year, no matter how you spin it, that they beat both of us last year. Pretty embarrassing if you're us, obviously. But, I mean, the guy's done some good things. He's got a heavy senior-laden class, so he likes his team. And then a lot of people, when you hear this all the time, too, Kentucky only cares about basketball. And that's true for the most part. But they had a winning season for the first time in a while. They went 7-6 last year. They beat their rival, Louisville. They found a quarterback in Johnson, the mobile dual-threat guy. They were a lot like Missouri, and Vandy was pretty good defensively, but Missouri and Kentucky both put up some ridiculous offensive numbers last year, but they literally couldn't stop anybody. You look at the Tennessee game, Missouri scored 37 points against us. They still lost by 4 touchdowns. So when you lose by 4 touchdowns and you score 5 of your own, that's a concern. So Missouri and Kentucky are kind of in the same boat. Going to be really strong again offensively, bringing back their quarterbacks, but defensively.
He led the SEC in passing yardage last year, didn't he?
Yeah, and offensively, they racked up more yards than anybody in the SEC. They were number one, but that just shows you how bad Missouri had to be defensively. They led the league offensively and went 4-8 last year. 4-8. After an offense that good. That just shows you how bad defensively they were. Kentucky also atrocious defensively. And we won a game against Kentucky similar to the way we beat Missouri, like by 20 points, 60-40 or whatever it was. So can these teams take a step defensively? That's the only way they can compete in the SEC. I actually would think Vandy's got a better shot at competing in the conference than the other two because they're better defensively. If they can, you know, get better offensively, which they did show some with Shermer late in the season against Tennessee, which Tennessee did that for a lot of people. And one more thing I'll say about Tennessee's defense, Josh mentioned it, how bad defensively we were. Now, another thing you got to think about, Bob Shoup, a former Vanderbilt defensive coordinator, former Penn State defensive coordinator, he coached under that piece of crap, James Franklin. Okay. Now, I don't know if you've heard about the lawsuit, Joshua, but Shoup had in his contract that he would pay the school, Penn State, $900,000 if he did not receive a head coaching job after 1 year at the University of Tennessee. So he had a $900,000 reasons to be a head coach after last season. And he expected to be a head coach after last season. And I would expect with that contract the way it was that he would have taken a lot of jobs to make sure that he didn't have to pay that money back. He expected to come in here and be the missing link. Tennessee was supposed to win the SEC, be great. Obviously, it didn't go that well. His defense was awful. Injuries were part of that. So there were no head coaches. There were no jobs being offered to him as a head coach. So he was in trouble, and he had nowhere to go but stay. So then he owes Penn State $900,000, but now he's put out a counterclaim to the $900,000 they are forcing him to pay, saying, no, I don't have to pay you because you told me when I left Penn State to, when I left Happy Valley to go on an interview at Tennessee, said, if you get on that plane, you're no longer employed here. So he's saying that, hey, I was fired because I was told if I got on the plane, I'd leave. So that's his counterclaim to not pay the money. I've heard his comments on it. He will be paying the money. He may not pay all of it. They may come to an agreement because I heard him say, you know, they have a number in mind. We have a number in mind. So he's going to pay it, but I don't know that you'd heard that story, Joshua. So I wanted to break that out. Pretty weird story, though.
Somebody that's supposed to be thinking one or two moves ahead of everybody else. It just makes you wonder what the hell these guys are thinking sometimes when they negotiate these deals, because that's a ridiculous assumption that you're going to go in and be a head coach after 1 year with that team. I mean, I know we had some talent last year, but we didn't have, you know, like Urban Meyer or Nick Saban type talent last year in comparison. So I'm not sure why he would ever do something like that. That's incredibly weird. That's very strange, too. That's odd.
It's definitely an ego situation when you're like looking at this stuff and going, why would you do something like that? And he's a guy that's had, before he left, he had five straight top 25 defenses when you look at Penn State and Vandy in the 5 years he was there. He looks at how good we're supposed to be, and he's had his name thrown out there, and he wants to be a head coach. And he's sitting there thinking, well, I got a great shot at being a head coach after this season. Everything looks like it's going to work out. And maybe with injuries, maybe it would. But you don't want to pigeon your – I mean, he only makes about that amount of money. So he's about to give away a year's salary probably. I think that's what – because we pay him about $1 million. So he's going to be giving away a year's salary, probably everything he made last year, to Penn State, or most of it. But moving on, the East is, you know, they are the way they are. We'll see how the bottom works out. Now, South Carolina is one team we haven't touched on. And, Josh, one thing that was said at Media Days that I thought was funny – and that's a guy who I really can't stand. Muschamp came in. Now, he's also a fraternity guy, but he's just kind of a dick. You can tell. I will say he's had Lyle's number, because Butch Jones is 0-for-5 against Will Muschamp. 4 at Florida, 1 at South Carolina, and that's the one thing you've got to do this year. If South Carolina beats you at home this year, then you're doing something wrong. You can't let Will Muschamp beat you 6 years in a row, especially the last two at South Carolina. But the funniest thing he said was he came in, I think he was in the last day. So when you do media days, Josh, there's like three that go on each day, roughly three or four, to get your 14 teams, right? And Muschamp was one of the last guys to go. And he walked in and he goes, you guys are looking pretty rough, to the media. That's what he said. He goes, you guys are looking pretty rough. He said, you look like that country song, you look like I need a drink right now. And that's literally what he said. He quoted the country song saying, you look like I need a drink right now. I was like, well, that's an interesting way to start it. But, I mean, does anybody truly believe that this guy, and I want to get your opinion on this, Joshua, who had 4 years at Florida, if you can't win at Florida consistently and take them down after Urban Meyer, is there a great chance that you're going to be able to get South Carolina where they need to be? I mean, I would say that's pretty doubtful.
Exactly. I think, first of all, you do not have the recruiting pool. Let's just start there.
No.
And I don't even have to go beyond that probably because, you know, I mean, it's the same situation with Spurrier. If he can't do the same thing over at South Carolina that he was doing at Florida, then I don't think there's any way that Muschamp's going to be able to turn that around either.
you have to have some serious pull as a coach to start pulling some talent into a school like South Carolina, especially with all the ACC schools around, all of the SEC schools in the area that are stealing your recruits. It's just not the amount of people that you would have in an area like Florida to be able to recruit from. So,
yeah,
absolutely not.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for him. The only thing that may keep him alive is, and I think they were, I can't remember what they were last year, 5-7 or 6-6, something to that effect. But the expectations are a lot lower at South Carolina, so maybe he can find a way to survive by going 6-6, 7-5, which you obviously can't do at Florida. But it'll be interesting to see. If you remember last year, obviously, the heartbreaking loss the Vols had to South Carolina made their season, kind of like Vandy did, made their season by beating the Vols. Jake Bentley, a senior in high school, who was should have been going to prom. Instead of going to prom, he's throwing touchdown passes against the Vols as a senior in high school. Early enrollee, should be a senior in high school. He's back. And defensively, South Carolina was not great last year. That's kind of their thing. They've got to get better defensively. Debo Samuel is one of the most talented receivers in the SEC. He's back for Bentley. But South Carolina, they just don't – he's going to bring some talent in there. But like Josh said, you can't recruit. Jadeveon Clowney is not just sitting there in your backyard anymore, okay? No. You're not going to get those types of players that are just sitting in South Carolina. And like Josh said, makes a great point. Clemson – the other ACC schools, other SEC schools coming in and taking a lot of those guys. And it's just very hard to get somebody to just, that's very talented out of another state to come to Columbia, South Carolina. It's just not easy, but we'll see where they go. They're predicted to be, I believe, fourth in the SEC, right behind Tennessee. And they've got Missouri last and Kentucky and Vandy 5-6 respectively. But we'll see how it shakes out. There's a couple other names I want to discuss before we get into the new rules segment, okay? And we'll talk about one of them here. One guy on the hot seat here is our boy Gus Malzahn. Now, Gus is a guy I like for Auburn, okay? He's a sweet guy. He goes to Waffle House with his wife every night after a Auburn victory, okay? So that's something to know about him. He gets some the hash browns, I believe, smothered and covered, okay? just in case you're wondering. He's a good guy, good person, really excited to see what they are. Auburn is predicted to be the second best team in the SEC behind Alabama, period. Not just the East and West, just period. They bring back a lot of talent, but Gus is on the hot seat. He's had a couple not so great years. The thing with Gussie Poo is he is talented when he has a quarterback that can run his system, right? No matter if that's Nick Marshall or whoever that is. Now, they've got a big transfer in like Zaire for Florida, Jared Stidham. I believe he was a five-star, went to Baylor a couple years ago. He has transferred. He went to JUCO. He transferred to Auburn. He's going to be their starting quarterback. They've got a lot of talent defensively. I think Gussie will have a good enough season to get him off the hot seat, as they are projected to be a pretty solid team, maybe have a 9-3 type season. I mean, he's obviously done some great things. I mean, you think about it as a Tennessee fan, Josh, Auburn has been in the national title game 2 out of the last 7 years. That's impressive stuff. I mean, you're talking they won in 10, and then I believe Auburn played, in 13 against Oregon? They played Oregon in 10. Can beat them. And then they lost to Florida State, 2 or 3 years ago in the championship. So, I mean, 2 out of the last 7 years in the national championship. I think Auburn or Alabama has been in probably the national championship every year almost for the last 9 to 10 years, let's say at least 8 years, which is insane. But I love Gus. One other guy, Josh, I want to get your opinion on. I know he's a little chubby, but he's a real sweet guy. Our boy Brett Bielema, Arkansas's head coach. And first of all, let's start out with what's most important. This man has way outkicked his coverage. I don't know if you've ever seen his wife. She's a young blonde. I think she used to be a volleyball player. Now, Brett's a cool dude, okay? He's probably the coolest coach in the SEC. He's got the best, funniest one-liners at, now that Spurrier's retired, in the conference. He was really funny. But first of all, he way outkicked his coverage. He had, when he went to SEC Media Days 2 weeks ago, he had just had his first child, which was 2 days old, I think, when he went there. But I just like Brett. I really do. I've always liked him. Was great at Wisconsin. He's a big, what's that country music singer's name? The little guy, who's a big Arkansas fan. Him and Brett are boys. His name's Moore. What's his name? Justin Moore. Justin Moore, baby. Justin Moore is a big Arkansas fan. I saw Brett. Brett likes a nice beer. He likes to party. But he's a good coach. And people are saying he's on the hot seat. I think me and Josh have discussed this before. But, you know, that's not likely. I don't see them, unless they have an absolute collapse, doing anything with Brett Bielema. Because here's the thing at Arkansas, and I think Josh has said this before in pre-production meetings. Who are you going to get if you get rid of a guy like Brett Bielema with his attributes? Am I right, Joshua?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the best coach that they've had in a long time. There's not just a ton of people dying to go to the state of Arkansas to begin with. And if you've watched these teams, they've been so close to being actually a really good team. They've come down to the wire with some very tough SEC West teams in the last few years. And just lost and been on the wrong side of some really tough games. So you really kind of admire this team and kind of pull for them each year. So I hope the guy has some success this year. But I think out of all of the coaches in the SEC West, this guy's probably the least hot seat compared to most of the other ones that are going on with Sumlin and Gus Malzahn and so forth. And, well, Freeze is gone now, but he was on the hot seat as well. Yeah. So. You know.
Yeah, we can kind of redo that number because we were doing a hot seat board, but we had one removed 2 weeks ago for a Bud Dial. So we'll pencil him out. And let's jump into our last couple teams in the SEC. One of them, the Raging Cajun himself, Mr. Humma, Ed Orgeron. Uh-huh. He's had an interesting career and life in general, okay? I think this guy probably likes to party like Lane Kiffin did here at Tennessee, because Ed was a coach here when he was the recruiting coordinator and D-line coach here. But you got to look at Ed's career. Ed has been a head coach at Ole Miss, failed miserably, even though he recruited well. He was the interim coach at USC, did good things. He wanted the head job. They said, get out of here. We're going to hire somebody else. Then he goes to LSU as a D-line coach. Then he becomes the interim head coach there when Les goes down. And then they give him the interim job. And then they give him the real job, take off the interim tag, which a lot of people were shocked by. You got to realize when you look at Ed's contract, this guy is making very little money compared to everybody else in the SEC. I believe he's at like 2.5 or maybe 3 at the very most million a year. And Ed's doesn't have a very big leash. Okay, let's say that. Like, usually when you bring in a coach, you say, well, this guy's got some time. If Ed doesn't do very well in his first two years, I predict him to be out of there, because this is not like a normal hire. They're hoping it works out and that everything goes well for him. But if he doesn't get it done in a couple years, he's going to be struggling. And the thing that I find interesting on LSU, and I'll have Josh chime in on LSU and Ed Orgeron as a whole, they've got some talent always defensively. They've always got talent offensively. Geis is maybe the best player in the SEC, who was backing up Fournette last year, had an incredible year because Fournette was hurt. But the problem that LSU's always had is they've never had a quarterback. They've always struggled. Jamarcus Russell was probably the last quarterback they had his last season before he blew up to 300 pounds as one of the biggest busts of all time, but still ended up pocketing $40 million before that happened, is they can't get a quarterback to play. Now, they've got a guy coming back who's not that good, Danny Etling. He's okay. But they've just never had consistent quarterback play, and it's part of the reason why Les Miles is no longer there. But can they be that physical team and do some things? And Ed Orgeron's brought in a new offensive coordinator that's going to open things up a little bit. But LSU, you know, Tennessee plays them late in the season. It'll be interesting to see where we're at during that. That's a home game. But Josh, talk to me about LSU in general and the Raging Cajun, Ed Orgeron Humma.
Yeah, so first of all, Geis is going to be a beast, no question.
Absolutely.
About it. But the big question I have here is, what is the deal with Ed Orgeron, and why is it that teams are reluctant to give him that head coaching job? Because it seems like, you know, where he's at LSU, that the players pretty much demanded that he be the head coach.
Absolutely.
And it seems like the players love him. So, you know, what's the deal with him having like the short leash, or, you know, USC not really wanting to take a shot with him? I guess USC just feels like they can get much better at any point in time. But I mean, what is the deal with him? Why is it kind of not the normal hire? I would guess.
Well, and I think he's to be honest with you, it's a couple things. I think one, I don't want to say he's got a spotty past, because I don't know for sure. But if you listen to him and you listen to the other 13 coaches in the SEC, there is a different air about him. And I don't know what that is. I mean, you know, maybe a lack of intelligence or whatever you would call it. But the thing is,
why do you say that? Because of his Cajun accent, or
yeah, I'm not sure he knows. I don't know. Maybe he could count to 50 if you gave him a long time from one. But I'm not guaranteeing that. Okay. Now, yeah, part of it's the Cajun accent. Part of it is me just stereotyping him to hell. And I don't know if that's fair or not. But you ask, why did he not get a job? I mean, you got to think, he was at Ole Miss for about 3 years. And it failed miserably, even though he recruited well. He did good things as the interim, but some people feel, you know, as the interim, yeah, he's great, but can he sustain it for a long time? USC didn't think so. They didn't go the route. LSU went the route, and you make a great point, Josh. LSU went the route mostly because the players played well with him as the interim, and they like having him around. They like him as their coach. So they reluctantly gave him the shot, because you can see with the contract, they're not going to pay a guy that's had spotty success at best as a head coach, they're right, not going to give the big numbers to. So he's going to get a chance, but he's only going to get a couple years, I would think, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, they got to play Alabama every year, and they play that physical style of football. And the problem is, I remember, what was it, a couple years ago, Fournette was on there, and I think they pounded him, and he literally gained like 3 yards the whole day. So you kind of fit into Alabama's game plan when you play that way. So I think they're going to spread it out some this year, but we'll see if that creates more wins. Now, jumping onto our last two teams, let's start with Texas A&M. Sumlin, as we've talked about before, has some rumors of having a little bit of a drinking problem, okay? Now, we do like to start rumors here on the All Out Blitz podcast. We haven't substantiated it. We haven't taken shots with Kevin Sumlin, but it's just what we hear. Now, he seems like a gentle guy. There's a lot of great people that love the bottle. But the problem with him, more so than his drinking, is he has started, I believe, 5-0 the last two seasons. And I believe they have limped home to win like 4 of their last like 9 games. And I think they finished like 8-5 or so the last couple seasons. So people are not loving the way he's finishing seasons. And I don't know if he's drinking more late in the season because he's nervous, or what the situation is. But he's losing, obviously, our boy came in from Oklahoma, the grad transfer, and they've got to replace him. They've got to replace Myles Garrett, who was obviously the number one pick in the draft. They've still got some talented guys, but he's firmly on the hot seat, Josh. So, I mean, we're talking, he's probably number one on the list by far. Can he survive? I mean, they've got a lot of money at Texas A&M. They got that oil money. They've got a bigger stadium than Tennessee, 103,000. So, I mean, they've got the resources to get him out if he doesn't get it done. But Josh, talk to me. What are you thinking about Texas A&M?
I think he's gone after this year. I mean, he's got too much to recover, and he's got one of the toughest conferences to have to deal with. And they're not happy with him. I mean, it's all over news. It's all over sports radio. He's not had a lot of success, but he's had so much talent there, you can't even believe it. So I think this is his last year at A&M, definitely.
Yeah, I think there's a good there's a great chance. I mean, Johnny Football, as much as you can say, and I know that guy's out of the league and nobody's shocked, but what has he really done after riding the coattails of Johnny Manziel? There hadn't been a ton of success since Johnny doing some miraculous things in college. And we'll see what he can do, but obviously I don't feel confident with him. You jump to this last team, Mississippi State, the Cowbells. the what was the guy's name? Jeffrey, the guy that found out that Hugh was butt dialing escorts. Jeffrey something. Yeah. Remember, he was a Mississippi State fan. He was a Mississippi State fan. He had a tattoo. Look up his name.
The Mississippi State fan was Steve Robertson.
Steve Robertson, yes, sir. Has a Mississippi State tattoo on his hand. Found Jeffrey. I was way off. I knew it started with an S, though. So I'm sure he's fired up about this team. This is kind of an under-the-radar team, to be honest with you. And I'll tell you this. Dan Mullen, he's a guy I like. I really do. This is a good dude. He's been there for, I think this is like his ninth year, and they're not getting rid of him, okay? This is a lot like Arkansas. You are not going to do better than Dan Mullen at Mississippi State. He brought you 2 years ago to the number one team in the country. You were ranked the number one. You were the number one team in the country with Dak Prescott in the middle of his senior season. So get out of my face saying that you can do better than Dan Mullen. Now, Dan Mullen's, he always talks about at media days about a shoe game. Like, he's got like some weird sneakers on. And he's like, my shoe swag's pretty good today. You know what I mean? So he's got a little bit of that cute gentleness about him. But they've got a quarterback there that a lot of people may not have heard of, but he is going to be really strong. The guy's a dual threat. Nick Fitzgerald really played well down the stretch last year. And even though they weren't great, he has got a lot of talent. They expect to be better. A lot of people expect Mississippi State to take a jump. I know those cowbells are going to be ringing, but I'm excited to see it. They're predicted kind of in the middle of the pack of the West, and you hate to see that you have to play every team in the West, but that's kind of the nature of the beast right now. I know everybody's ready for Nicky to retire, but it'll be interesting to see where Mississippi State lands. They've been obviously a middle-of-the-road program, but Dan's brought them to new heights that they've never been to. Now, Dan may not get as emotional as some coaches on the sidelines, but let's kind of transition to the new rules in the SEC. And Josh, I want to get your opinion on both of them. One of them is you can't leap over a player anymore onto another player or over a player, not even touch them, to block a field goal or extra point, which I kind of find silly. I don't know how many injuries have ever occurred from that, especially when you're just jumping over a guy, never touching him. I just think that may be what you call athletic ability. And it may be, you know, you not allowing people to use their talents. And so you're going to outlaw it. So I find that kind of silly. Josh, what do you think about that new rule?
Yeah, I mean, how many people can actually achieve that to begin with?
Not a lot.
And then it's like, again, the rate of injury, they quoted as player safety is the reason for the rule.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm not really sure that that's the thing I would attack as far as player safety in the game of football right now, given all of the recent information that's been coming out about the different injuries these guys are going through. So I think it's absolutely a waste of time, in my opinion, for that rule. And it actually eliminated something pretty cool that we could have started seeing as a result of what happened last year. So, I don't know. That one's silly to me.
I agree with you. I think Josh hit the nail on the head. I think there's a lot of things to focus on with player safety, but that's not one of them. So that seems like overkill right there. The other one people are fired up about, Nick Saban, I can't remember the exact quote, but he said something to the effect of, that's like taking a hammer to a flea about this in second rule. And part of it's because he's worried about, and don't quote me because it was something, but that was not the exact quote. But he is upset because he knows he's going to get flagged. So the new rule is when you're yelling at a referee and you're dog cussing him about something, you can't walk onto the field right beside him and just scream at him. You have to stay on that like white area that you have to stay on the sidelines. And if you don't and you're yelling at him and you're on the grass, you get a 15-yard penalty. Okay, 2 15-yard penalties, and you are ejected from the game. So some of the coaches at Media Day said they were going to they've always had a get-back coach, which a get-back coach is a guy that keeps people on the sidelines, not running on the field, even keeps the coach from going too crazy. Some of the coaches elaborated that they want to have 2 get-back coaches because they've got to restrain themselves because this rule is going to be devastating. So Nick doesn't like it. It seems to be more of a rule for the referees to run and hide, to be honest with you, because they don't want these coaches coming out there and just dog cussing in front of everybody. So if they can stay in the grass and get away from the coaches, hey, let's hide from let's hide from these guys. But this is a big rule, and it's going to get called some this year, and it's going to be kind of annoying. But, Josh, talk to me about this rule.
So how much do the get-back coaches make, though, if they're being hired by Saban? Or would Saban even hire a get-back coach? I mean, I just feel like he would ignore that person entirely. Well, probably just get really annoyed with him, you know?
Well, when I say get-back coach, he may be like an assistant strength coach, or he may be a GA or something, you know what I mean? I don't know that his title is, hey, there's Jerry Smith, get-back coach, making $175,000. I don't know that that's his number one main title, but he is going to have a get-back coach. Man. But what do you think about it, Josh?
The rule in general, I agree. I don't understand how these coaches are going to get their point across to a referee if they do potentially screw up. So basically, the referees don't even have to hear any kind of criticism in the game of anything they could potentially be screwing up terribly. And, you know, last year, there was a lot of calls that were made very poorly, if I remember correctly. And it was actually a little bit of an issue. But that's one thing. And then the other thing is, I'm trying to think, how many times was it actually useful when a situation was going on and a coach actually had to run on the field to try to get a timeout or was trying to get a call changed and it actually worked in their favor? Did that ever work in someone's favor that we can remember? Because that would actually prevent that from happening as well. So I think you could actually change the course of some of these games pretty strongly there if these guys aren't getting the feedback in the middle of the game of what's going on. You know, there could be something that they're simply not aware of that the coaching staff is saying that they're not saying. So while I agree, maybe the coaches shouldn't just dog cuss them every game, which is actually kind of funny. You know, it's now like a tradition to catch them on the CBS TV that's supposed to be G-rated. And you just see every coach mouthing F-bombs and GDs left and right. But in high def, right? That's what our 4K televisions are good for, so we can see our beloved coaches yelling F-bombs right at everything. But how much do you think that's going to impact some of those situations? I mean, does that actually help or hurt?
Well, it's interesting you bring some of that stuff up because the rule seems to be like predicated on if you're screaming at the referee. So like, could you like go up and call a timeout in the grass? I think you can. And could you just like, you could be like talking to him and being nice to him. But then does that become a gray area? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, hey, how you doing, Bill? And it's like, how's the family doing? And then be like, well, you missed that call, you piece of crap. And then like, whoa, you're not on the white, get back over there. So it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, you got to replicate like, hey, you've either got to be dog cussing me and you got to be back there. Or if you're going to be friendly, you can be standing over here. So I think there may be some great lines to it. And the other point, too, is you're going to hear this on sports talk throughout the season. You're going to see, I saw Nick Saban out in the grass screaming at people 10 times during that game. No flags called. And then my guy, Dan Mullen, he got two thrown on him in two games. So, I mean, I think you're going to see if there's no consistency there, you could run into some problems with people being upset. Let's hope that we do see.
There's definitely not going to be any consistency. If it's leaving up for the referee to decide or discern whether somebody is yelling in a stadium filled with 100,000 people, how in the hell is there going to be any consistency in that call?
It's true. And they've got to see where they're located and see that they're cussing. And It's going to be difficult. And when you give referees judgment calls, it becomes very difficult for that to be, it always seems to be a concern. Like, so I could see us next year at this time having another discussion about the issues that occurred with this new rule, right? But I'll tell you what, we've come to the end of a very, very gentle first show of the All Out Blitz podcast. I hope you join us every week. We're going to be churning out one of these, probably release a couple episodes, and then we'll churn out one a week, every week, bringing you whatever's going on in sports, hard-hitting topics. And it's not going to be all about sports. Let's clear that up right now. Okay, we're going to dabble in everything that occurs, okay? If somebody from United beats the crap out of somebody again, we're going to be all over it, okay? So whatever occurs, current events, we lead with sports. That's what this podcast is about. But the All Out Blitz moniker is we're bringing it to me every week, unfiltered, and we're just bringing it hardcore. You may not love what we have to say, but You know, we're just speaking the truth, so don't get mad at us. And we're looking forward to it, really excited about it. This is Brett Clendenin and Joshua Jenkins signing out for the All Out Blitz podcast.